Notícia.
The U.S. Supreme Court strikes down affirmative action programs for university admissions in the United States. Will those affected turn to the country's historically black colleges and universities? This week, we'll look at HBCUs, how they're breaking new ground and building new bridges between the United States and African countries. And we'll show you why students at one of America's top HBCUs are learning to speak Africa's indigenous languages. Straight Talk Africa starts now.
Hello there and welcome to Straight Talk Africa. I'm Heidi Adams. It is great to be with you. Race, fairness, and affirmative action have always been flashpoints in American society. And a new decision by the U.S. Supreme Court has reignited a long-running debate over whether minority students have equal access to higher education. The ruling by the Supreme Court throws out decades of affirmative action policies that have helped diversify student bodies, especially at the country's elite universities, where students of color remain underrepresented. The controversy has renewed attention on other institutions of higher learning, known as HBCUs, or historically black colleges and universities, which have always welcomed students from across the United States and beyond. Some of these institutions are already seeing an increase in the number of students from African countries. This week, we profile one HBCU that's using that shift in demographics to build lifelong relationships between America and African countries. We visited Howard University in Washington, D.C. recently, where students are developing a deeper understanding of the African continent through language.
Sawibona, Igamalami, Ingu, Imani Waters, Ingi Funda Zulu.
I'm Jumbo. Didalangu ni Ebony Brown.
Sawubona. My name is Benjamin Besson. I study Zulu.
Habari Zainu. Didalangu ni Alexa.
I study Zulu because after taking it and really thoroughly enjoying the language and learning more about the culture, now it's giving me more opportunities on campus and even the opportunity to go be able to study abroad this summer.
I chose Swahili specifically just because I love The Lion King. I didn't know the words, like, you know, Rafiki and Simba were actually key Swahili words. And I've been studying it for about 3 years. It's been a great time.
Seeing the rise in the black freedom struggle in South Africa with Nelson Mandela and Stephen Biko and all the freedom fighters there, it's very closely related to the civil rights movement here in America. And seeing that really gives me a good cultural connection to South Africa.
I'm very happy to study Swahili because of how important it is as a globalizing language. And I'm excited to do diplomatic work, translation work, and things within the realm of international relations in East Africa in the future when I graduate.
The history and politics of Africa are taught throughout American college campuses. But these students at Howard University are exploring African culture and values by learning to speak its indigenous languages. Professor Leonard Mwaka teaches Swahili, spoken by tens of millions of people on the continent and around the world.
Howard University is a place where we see African Americans, most of them coming here, people who want to identify with Africa. So the need and the interest in African languages and Swahili in particular is intentional on their part because they want to really connect with the motherland. What is also important is to see a newer generation, a new cohort of students who are heritage language learners. These are people that their parents were born in Africa or they were born themselves in Africa and they want to learn this language.
Howard University is home to the largest African languages program in the United States. Here, students immerse themselves in Amharic, Swahili, Yoruba, Zulu, Somali, and Wolof. Professor Krista Johnson directs Howard University's Center for African Studies.
I mean, I think that there's a lot of buzz about Africa, being the future, right? We know that it's the youngest continent that we have, and we know that something like 1 in 4 people in the world are going to be African in the next several decades. So it's an important shift, and I think our students understand and appreciate that as well. So having an opportunity to really learn and learn about Africa, study African languages, and really appreciate that culture, but then also understand its past, but then also its future.
Howard is one of America's flagship HBCUs, or historically black colleges and universities. It opened more than a century ago, after the U.S. Civil War, to educate black Americans. Over the years, HBCUs have produced historic and influential American leaders, among them civil rights icon Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., billionaire media mogul Oprah Winfrey, renowned novelist and Nobel laureate Toni Morrison, and U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris. These institutions also have a long history of welcoming foreign students from Africa, some of whom went on to become leaders and heroes at home.
Nnamdi Azikiwe, who's the first president of Nigeria, was a student here at Howard University. Many people might be familiar that Kwame Nkrumah, the first president of Ghana, was a student at Lincoln University, which is also an HBCU here in the United States. So that's the history, you know, in which Howard University now stands. We have always been on the side of social justice, on the side of independence and liberation for peoples of African descent.
Apartheid South Africa's order to ban black languages from school underscored the power of language to unite people or oppress them. The fight over language helped trigger the end of the apartheid regime. That struggle is personal for Piwoku Shlemnyandu, born and raised in KwaZulu-Natal. Now, here at Howard, Mnyandu teaches his mother tongue, isiZulu.
Remember every sound you see, you say, so mpo, everyone say mpo.
Teaching Zulu through a cultural lens, he says, makes the language more accessible.
It's a tabula rasa environment. It's zero judgment. So when they come to my class, what they know about Africa is usually, it varies.
Mnyandu credits the cultural influence of movies like Black Panther for helping black Americans see their connection to Africa in a different light.
So they started looking at African cultures very differently than their parents perhaps used to look at African cultures. And another factor is that Africa is becoming more important in their lives. So whether they're going to international business or not, they cannot succeed without knowing something about Asia and Africa. So there's been a perfect storm outside the classroom that has led us to where we are.
Mnyandu's classes are vibrant and interactive. He shares nuances of Zulu culture, values, and etiquette.
I teach them to completion, not perfection. Because sometimes American students are quite, they're perfectionists. But if you teach the students, no. Africans won't judge you when you say a syllable wrong. They won't stop you mid-sentence and correct you because they know who you are. And so don't be anxious about these names. So that's a big thing that actually gives them a lifelong skill.
Skills that can build lasting bridges between the U.S. and Africa and equip these young Americans with the cultural intelligence and confidence to cross them. And that is how you do it in the ways of the AmaZulu. Well, those students, by the way, are on a trip to South Africa as we speak. And I'd like to give a big thanks to our wonderful Karina Chowdhury, who filmed and co-produced that story with me. Well, we're going to take a short break here, and when Straight Talk Africa returns.
We shouldn't avoid part of the dark side of that history, which is that HBCUs were created because people of African descent could not enter and were barred from mainstream, predominantly white institutions.
From Ghana's Kwame Nkrumah to Nigeria's Nnamdi Azikiwe, we'll look at the ties that bind America's historically black colleges and universities with the African continent. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
Straight Talk Africa, welcome back. This week, our focus is on historically black colleges and universities, or HBCUs, and their role in educating a generation of American leaders who hope to build new, stronger ties between the United States and African countries. My guests this week are Krista Johnson from Howard University and Travis Adkins from the U.S. African Development Foundation. Here's our conversation. Krista Johnson, Howard University's Director for the Center for African Studies. Hello there and a warm welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Also a warm welcome to you, Travis Adkins, the President and CEO of the U.S. African Development Foundation. It is so great to have both of you here with me in studio. And we're talking about historically black colleges and universities here in the United States. And Krista, I want you to start out for us here. For many people in our audience, an HBCU might seem like a bit of a foreign concept or more of an American concept. Tell us a little bit about the place in the history of HBCUs in American society.
Sure. Thank you for having me, Haiti. So HBCUs, most of them were established right after the Civil War in the United States. So Howard was established in 1867, and they were established to provide educational opportunities, higher educational opportunities for African Americans at the end of slavery. So they do have, in many ways, a unique American imprint, on them. And initially, they were really established to provide higher education, but not too much higher education. So we didn't have law schools and medical schools and all of the rest of that. It was really more technical training that was provided at that time. But they've really evolved, and really the HBCU of today, I often say, is nothing like, I think, what we had certainly 50 years ago or certainly 100 years ago. But that history, especially with regards to engagement with Africa, has actually also been longstanding. So Howard, in particular, has had a department or a program of African studies since 1953. But even before then, really, it was African-American scholars at Howard University, Ralph Bunch, Alain Locke, Rayford Logan, William Leo Hansberry. This is in the 1920s and the 1930s, who were really allies and advocates for liberation movements and liberation activists on the continent, people like Nnamdi Azikiwe, Kwame Nkrumah, and others. So that history and that engagement with the African continent goes back quite a while.
Travis Adkins, you are the CEO and the president of the U.S. African Development Foundation. You are also an HBCU alumnus. What did an HBCU education do for you?
Yes, I happen to be a proud graduate of Fisk University in Nashville, Tennessee. And I think for me, it is this continuation of the kind of history that Krista talked about. We shouldn't avoid part of the dark side of that history, which is that HBCUs were created because people of African descent could not enter and were barred from mainstream, predominantly white institutions and needed a place to gain education, to gain skills, technical literacy, and things of that nature, to look, to fight, to insert themselves into the mainstream of society at a time when the prevailing notion was that they maybe perhaps should not be included there. And so that legacy is something that I was always very proud of and aware of, even as a young person. My mother also had attended an HBCU. And so for me to follow in that legacy was something that I was immensely proud of. And I think also it was there, even though I had the passion for Africa and African studies and the connection between Africa and its diaspora, it really was the crucible of the HBCU that gave me the chance to immerse myself not only in the study of it, but even in our student body. The African diaspora was there, so begin to meet people. Me being from Tennessee, student next to me from Nigeria, student next to her from Haiti and so forth, and having the ability to grow in that way and understand not just from the context of books and classroom, but also from personal relations with friends who became lifelong friends in this journey to understand, explore, and seek to build relationships throughout the African diaspora.
This is very exciting, just to even imagine having students from different parts of the world in your class. I come from a country that was isolated for much of my education. We didn't have that. I think people forget sometimes in places like South Africa, African history wasn't taught. I take it it was completely different at HBCUs where African history was taught.
Absolutely. So Howard, as I said before, was probably the first. It might not be the oldest program of African studies, but it really even trains. I mean, William Leo Hansberry was here, as I said, in the 1918s, 1920s, and Elaine Locke doing African studies and developing historical curriculum, that spoke to Africa, its people, its geography, its culture, et cetera. So that that was very unique. You're absolutely right. At the time, right, to have an institution of higher education that was really offering those courses and teaching those courses. And then to Travis's point as well, Howard really became one of the most international campuses in the United States in the 1950s and 60s as African countries became independent. And a lot of students came to the United States to study, and they came to HBCUs. So Howard really had kind of one of its heydays, certainly would have been the 1960s, where you really had this influx of African students who came over that really internationalized the campus and really, you know, I think made an important imprint in terms of the character of the campus body and the community.
And I had read many of your students had gone on to become quite the thorn in the sides of colonial powers in the countries that they had come from. But speaking of the student body, and Travis had mentioned some of this earlier, about what the student body was like then, what is the student body like now? Do HBCUs still, I wouldn't say exclusively, but mainly serve students who are of African descent?
I'd say they mainly serve, but not exclusively, and not even in the numbers that say they did probably a couple of decades ago. And there's a number of reasons for that. So part of our mission and our mandate, obviously, is to serve the African-American community, the African diasporan community. That's an important kind of component of our mandate. But interestingly, after desegregation, as Travis had mentioned, then when African-Americans had an opportunity to go to other institutions, you did tend to see a lot of African-Americans who had those opportunities go to what were the predominantly white institutions. But what's really remarkable and interesting since I've been back at Howard over the past 12 years or so is you're seeing our numbers really increase quite tremendously. And the students who are coming to us now are absolutely African Americans, but it's actually the diaspora even more broadly. We have a larger student, international student body, but also the African American community in the United States. Our demographics are changing as a population, right? So you have the largest growing population of African Americans in the United States is now people of from the continent. So historically, immigration came from the Caribbean, but more recently, you're seeing a lot of immigration from African countries. So we have a lot of first, second generation African Americans or Americans of African descent. So who have those closer ties, didn't come over with slavery, but have these closer ties and connections with the African continent, which again really enriches our campus. I think that certainly drives and is driving a lot of our interest and growing interest and renewed interest on Africa in recent years.
Essentially those who came in freedom.
Yes, correct.
Or whose parents have. Mm-hmm. Travis, why would you say HBCUs are important today? I mean, I know that over the years you've also straddled, you know, both the world of international development and foreign policy, but then also the world of academia. Why are HBCUs, would you say they're important today, and what kind of students would they appeal to?
Sure. Mm. I think they're important today for the same reason that they've always been important. So, of course, as you guys have laid out, the history is that they created an opening space for people of African descent to gain education. But that's not really what the foundation of these universities are about. If you go and you look at Howard, if you come to Fisk University, if you go to any of the other 105 or so HBCUs in the United States, in their mission statement, you will find things about truth mm-hmm. and justice and service mm-hmm. and character building and remaking the world in a way that is just, in a way that is inclusive, in a way that gives the truth to the aspiration of the United States for democracy, for equality, for equity and opportunities. And so anyone who is looking for character-based education would do well to look at HBCUs because, of course, as Krista said, it moves well beyond any notion of race, color, or phenotype to what kind of citizens our nation is producing, and HBCUs are widely known for producing those who are going to go out into the world, push back against the tide of history that has created inequality, and try to help us reshape our society to meet its ideals.
You should become the HBCU envoy.
Yes.
But Krista, as the head of the Center for African Studies, I want to turn to Howard University's African Languages Program. And of course, we spent some time with you and we spent some time with your wonderful students and some of your lecturers. Tell me a little bit more about the thinking behind your African Languages Program. What was the vision? What's the big dream here that you're trying to accomplish through language and African languages at that?
Sure. So Howard really has a comparative advantage when it comes to African languages. I think I probably mentioned when you were on campus that we had this academic year, we had over 1,000 students studying 8 African languages. We have large language programs in Yoruba, Swahili, Amharic, Zulu, and several others as well. I think, you know, we started off by really wanting to promote African languages and to really cater to our student body who are not just of the African diaspora, but they are really, many of them see themselves as global citizens. They understand that they need to get jobs in a global marketplace, and they see language acquisition as one of the skills that they can acquire that will give them a bit of a competitive advantage. So at Howard, we were able to really expand our African languages offerings to a tremendous, you know, number of students that we're reaching now. But I think we're now at a kind of a different phase, or at a new phase in terms of how we're looking at African languages. Obviously, we'll continue to offer languages at the undergraduate level and have, I think, overwhelming success at attracting students to those courses. But you know, just understanding and appreciating really the role of the diaspora and Africa really in international relations and in the global system in the coming decades, it's even more important for us to, you know, think about how it is that we build both cultural and linguistic competency in our workforce here in the United States, but also globally, right? And so we're looking to really expand and think really more creatively about how we use language in a variety of fields. So we already have a good number of business majors who come and take our African languages, mm-hmm. communications majors. So I think oftentimes we see languages as kind of segregated to the humanistic realm. But really, in fact, I think they're playing an increasing role in all of these other sectors and areas as well. So the Center for African Studies is really poised to start to take advantage of some of these opportunities and hopefully provide additional professional development opportunities for our students so that they understand, okay, we now have this language skills training. How do we actually apply that? Or what is this, you know, what does this mean for real world circumstances.
And Travis, you've been working on some, you know, ways in which bridges can be built between what you do, HBCUs, the African diaspora. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, for me, it goes to exactly what Krista was talking about. This is the opportunity for people from the continent and its diaspora to put themselves at the forefront of science and technology, of diplomacy, business, tech, economics and things of this nature. We always have been there, but I think that this program points to the need to expand our sense of what a kind of critical language in the foreign affairs arena is. Of course, it's always been kind of Russian, French, you know, Arabic, Mandarin, Spanish, and so forth. But as Africa becomes filled with more emerging markets, becomes more at the forefront of foreign policy and trade and investment, having a cadre of young people who are from some of these communities, who are from some of these nations, or who have a deep interest in doing work in those places, that they can be found, that they can be at the forefront of those who are competitive for roles to work in those places because of the language skills and the cultural competencies that they've gained at places like Howard, as elsewhere in their community. And so as I think about this whole piece that we have done with you all as a celebration, really, and a raising of awareness, not only of HBCUs, but of Howard's African Studies program and the Language Studies program, we're very excited to announce from the U.S. African Development Foundation our partnership with Howard University to provide paid internships to students from the African Language Studies program, which we hope will launch this fall in collaboration again with Krista and myself and other colleagues at USADF and Howard University, so that we are not only celebrating them, but that we are tapping into their talents, that we're using the skills and expertise that they bring to the table in real world work, right? And so that they are not just the future, but they are, in fact, the present. And this, of course, also offers them job opportunities to gain experience in the international world, in the U.S. government context. And then for me, lastly, is to be one of the voices in support of what the Biden administration has been promoting, a connection to Africa, the diaspora, as partners. And what better way to do that than through the study of language, than through the understanding of culture, and through the increased ability to communicate effectively with people across the continent.
Well, all of this makes me want to be at least 20 years younger, but what a great conversation. Thank you so much, Krista Johnson, Travis Atkins. It's such a great pleasure to have you both here and learn more about HBCUs and all the initiatives that you guys are working on. Fantastic work. Congratulations, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And that is our show this week. Thank you so much for always watching and for always listening. It was a pleasure to bring you this week's episode, and I will see you next time. Until then, it's goodbye from me.